Hey there, Chip Close here, host of the Restaurant Strategy Podcast. There's an old saying, a friend of mine was in advertising for a long time, and he said, everyone is first in line to go second. And I think that also relates to our industry. Maybe laugh out loud when I heard it. Maybe it made you laugh out loud. Now, everybody is first in line to go second. But what if we challenged ourselves to go first? I think one of the things that I want to talk about today, when we're talking about fixing restaurants, is how we challenge people, how we grow and be first in line to innovate, to invent, to push in new directions, to break boundaries. That's what we're going to talk about on today's episode of Restaurant Strategy. There's an old saying that goes something like this: you'll only find three kinds of people in the world: those who see, those who will never see, and those who can see when shown. This is Restaurant Strategy, a podcast with answers for anyone who's looking. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. My name is Chip Close, and this is Restaurant Strategy, a podcast dedicated to helping you build a more profitable restaurant. Each week, I leverage my 25 years in the industry to help you build that more profitable and sustainable business. I also work directly with owners and operators all over the country through my P3 Mastermind program. This is a group coaching format designed for independent operators who struggle with profitability. So if this sounds like you, listen up. You got a busy restaurant. You feed a lot of hungry people. You're a staple in the community, but you struggle with profitability, meaning you don't make as much as you think you should, then I want to chat with you. You set up a call to chat with me or someone from my team, just a 30-minute call so we can get to know each other, and let's see if you would fit into the program. Again, it's the P3 Mastermind. You sign up for a call by going to restaurantstrategypodcast.com/schedule, and yes, that link is in the show notes. So, Avi, when it comes to guest feedback, how do you recommend restaurants approach managing their reviews?
Yeah, so there are three things that we highly recommend, right? Number one, block out 30 minutes a week, one day a week, respond to reviews. While it would be nice to respond to all of them, focus on the 2, 3, and 4-star reviews, because that's where you're going to win people over and have room for improvement. Number two, create templates for yourself. Proven templates that you know work for 2, 3, 4, 5-star reviews. Save time. Number three, if you want to take it completely off your plate, come to Marquee. We have a wonderful managed review product where we will respond to all of your reviews as a true brand extension and take it completely off your plate.
And where can people go to learn more about Marquee?
Come visit us at marquee.com. That's MARQII.com. We look forward to chatting with you.
Now, we're in the middle of a 10-episode arc that I've dubbed Fixing Restaurants. There's tons of great things about our industry. We don't have to talk about those. Those we're already pretty good at. But there are things that are broken, industry-wide, concept-specific. There are things that are broken, and I think we can fix them. So in each of these 10 episodes, I'm talking about something that is broken, and then I'm sharing ways that you can move to fix it. Today, I want to talk about our failure to innovate, right? Again, I made that joke at the very beginning. So often, we are first in line to go second. We want to see someone else do it. We want to see if it works, and then we go. We want to let someone else be the first to go, and then we wait and see, and then we go. And I think some of that is smart, for sure. I get that. I'm not an idiot. But we can't do that all the time. We can't all stand around the pool waiting for someone to jump in. The pool is nice and refreshing, and you're gonna have a lot of fun if you go in the pool. Sometimes we just have to be the first one to jump in the pool. Sometimes we have to be the ones to get that party started. Now, when you look back, let's just say the last 30 years, right? And we've talked a lot about technology last time. We talk about technology a lot on this show because it is pushing our industry forward. And we talked about ways that restaurants are evolving, right? So last week's episode is about evolution. This one is all about innovation. That's not by accident. I wanted to have the first conversation before we had this second conversation, right? Evolution happens when we look around at the changing world and we figure out how to do what we need to do or what we're trying to do better, more efficiently or more effectively. We talked about experience versus convenience. I talked about McDonald's. I used it as an example because it's an example that so many people know. McDonald's is not experiential. I mean, McDonald's is not trying to create a great, wonderful, experiential dining experience. They are trying to, they exist for two reasons only, convenience and efficiency, right? They want to be the most convenient. That's why they're everywhere. And they want to be really efficient. They want to get you your food fast. They want to get you fed fast. So if it's easy to get to them because they're convenient and it's easy to get food because their systems have been optimized, then they win. And they are the best version of themselves today than they have ever, ever been. Part of it, part of their success really it relies on their ability to innovate. And it wasn't an easy decision to make, right? It wasn't easy for them to get rid of the things, the systems that had been in place for, you know, decades. This idea of, coming in, waiting in line, going to the cashier at the register, placing your order, waiting for your order to get put up. They basically shelved that entire thing, which was so such a key part of their existence, of the McDonald's experience, right? We think, well, would you like fries with that? All of that they were going to do away with. And that was true when they when they introduced their kiosks, right? And then they had, their drive-through window, which you could drive through, tell your order, you drove to the next window, paid, drove to the next window and picked your stuff up. And that was more convenient than parking your car and going in back in the 80s and 90s. But then we had the app, and then we had the pandemic, and then they doubled down on the app, and they had curbside. And what they realized is that, well, instead of curbside, what if we just had people order on the app and drive through to pick up their stuff? It's actually even more convenient than curbside and takes less personnel to make happen. So together with their kiosks for the in-store experience and the app and the repurposing the drive-through, using the drive-through in a new way, literally just to pick up the order rather than to order and pay and pick up, that the order and the payment would be processed through the app. They are the best version of themselves. And man, they took a lot of heat when they started rolling out their kiosks. Almost 10 years ago now. They took a lot of heat because they felt like it was impersonal, it was transactional. And of course, what they realized throughout is that their experience, the experience at McDonald's, was already transactional. So now instead of talking to a person that was acting like a robot, now you just talk to a robot. A beautiful, well-lit, well-designed, gamified robot, that kiosk screen. It's a better version of the McDonald's experience. And the proof is not only in the Net Promoter Score, which went up, but really, the proof is in the revenue generated and the profitability of the place, because they could reallocate their human resources. Rather than having all these people behind registers, they could repurpose some of them and have them cleaning the place or, you know, greeting people at the front door. They could also go with smaller footprints. Man, you're seeing that in real time. Rather than having four or five registers across, they only needed one or two for the people that didn't want to order at the kiosk, could still go and do the traditional McDonald's experience. But it changed the footprint they needed, right? And again, then the app allowed them to repurpose the drive-through. And that's something that they learned throughout the pandemic when they introduced curbside, right? You order, you show up, they'll bring the food out to you, and it's minimal contact with other people. And they said, oh, we could do that, but let's screw curbside. Let's just go through the drive-through. It is a better version of themselves, and they challenge themselves to innovate. And on the one hand, you could say, well, they're McDonald's. They got all this money. Of course they could do that. Yes, they had the resources to be able to change the infrastructure, meaning install all these kiosks across thousands and thousands of locations. I get it. But on the flip side, they had to make those upgrades in thousands and thousands and thousands of locations. So that was not a small number. The number that's required for a single sandwich shop or a single pizza shop or a single fried chicken concept to integrate that is actually relatively low. It's a very small percentage of your net sales over the course of a month. To install three beautiful kiosks, it costs almost nothing in the grand scheme of things. When you look at the fact that, and the McDonald's case study is really clear about this, that check average went up, that profitability went up, that consumer sentiment, right, their enjoyment of the experience went up. All of these things are byproducts of innovation. Okay, great. So I think we have an innovation problem where people are not willing to challenge the status quo. And and I want to talk about some key points of status quo that are going to have to be challenged in the next 5 or 10 years, whether we like it or not. It's going to be a hard conversation to have. We're going to have that conversation, the second part of this conversation, after a word from another one of our sponsors. Are you a restaurant owner or maybe a manager struggling to keep your team motivated and satisfied? Look no further than this helpful guide by 7Shifts, What Restaurant Employees Want, the 2024 report. The heartbeat of any successful restaurant lies in its people, but with the chaos of day-to-day operations, it's easy to lose sight of what truly matters, your team's happiness and their fulfillment. That's why 7Shifts went straight to the source, surveying over 1,500 active restaurant employees across North America to uncover what truly fulfills them in their workplace. Want to know the secret of building a thriving team? Interested in reducing turnover and boosting morale? The comprehensive report by 7Shifts has the answers you need. Don't let the stress of running a restaurant overshadow the importance of your team's well-being. Visit 7shifts.com/ccreport to grab your copy of What Restaurant Employees Want, the 2024 report. Get that today. Invest in your team. Invest in your success. Go find that link in the show notes. Okay, so we're talking all about innovation, right? Last episode, we were talking about evolution. Today, we're talking about innovation. Everybody loves to be first in line to go second, but we need people to go first. And I think there are areas that have to be innovated, that have to be rethought in the next 5, maybe 10 years. And it's fine if we don't want to solve them this year, but we have to start wrapping our heads around the problem because the problems are definitely coming. First one, let's talk about some of these things that we need to innovate on, right? And some of these you can take responsibility for. Some of these our technology partners are going to have to take ownership of. But those people are going to need you to challenge them, to tell them what you need. They are partners. They are there to serve us. We are clients of these software companies, of these tech companies. They exist to serve us. We have to tell them what we need rather than them telling us what they think we need. We have to tell them what we need, right? Legislation is changing. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about all of these things that I think are coming down the pike. First and foremost, we cannot avoid this technology conversation. Again, we talked about this last week when we were talking about evolution. I think there's a split coming. I think restaurants are getting more and more and more expensive. And so something in the middle that's just okay, I think it's going to be very difficult to convince someone to spend that kind of money on just something that's okay. I think people are going to start cooking more in the house, certainly more than they've done the last 10 years, especially midweek. I think people are still going to go out to celebrate with friends, to have, you know, dinners with people, celebrate birthdays, anniversaries, you know. I think people are going to do that. But instead of dining out 2 or 3 times a week, I think it's going to be 1 to 2 times a week. So if we imagine us losing, say, 30 to 50% of our business, that's a meaningful hit. And I think that's going to happen in our industry. But at the same time, I think people are going to spend more money in other areas, specifically for convenience, because our lives are getting busier. People continue to work. They're working more hours, multiple jobs. Kids have activities. We are running late for work. I think what we are going to be looking for, I think we have to stop thinking of ourselves as restaurants and thinking of ourselves more as food service, right? Food service meaning food that's prepared outside the home, and that's takeout and delivery. Yes, that's full service restaurant experiences. Yes, that's when you go out to McDonald's, all of that. But the market is growing, and I think certain areas in the market are going to contract. Specifically, I've said this, everything in the messy middle. I think everything in the messy middle is going to struggle to be profitable simply because they're not going to have the kind of volume that they once had 5 or 10 years ago. And I think that's going to be obvious. I think we're watching that in real time. So one thing that we're going to have to innovate on is how do we keep up with the next generation? Next generation was basically born with a phone in their hands. So how do we continue to speak to them and serve them in the ways that they want to and expect to be served? We can't do what we want to do. We have to do what they want. We have to provide the restaurant that they want, the kind of experience that they want. And I promise you, those that do it, those that innovate and think about that stuff really deeply and make it happen are going to be wildly, wildly profitable. Again, we're watching McDonald's succeed by doing this, by their injection of technology to make a more convenient, more efficient experience. Doesn't matter how you feel about McDonald's, you can't refute the numbers, the growth in revenue, the growth, the increase in profitability. What they've done over the last, let's say, 8 to 10 years is largely working. The proof is in the pudding. So what does that mean for us? That means for us, we're going to have to contend with the next generation as they have more purchasing power, what they want from the brands that they support, what they expect from transactions is specific. And I don't think they're going to do things the way that that we've done things. I think they're going to gravitate towards easier, more convenient, more seamless, efficient ordering. I think they're going to want to be able to order things, just go and have them ready and pick them up. I think that largely is this technology conversation. I think we have to address it. I think we absolutely have to address it. I also think we have to continue to innovate concept-wise. I think on the other side, right, so there's a piece of the generation, right, so there's this new generation coming up that really wants convenience and efficiency. On the other side, I think we've got people who really then go around collecting experiences. Now, I didn't invent that. That's something we've talked about for years. This experience economy that people aren't necessarily going and buying stuff like the previous generations did, but they're collecting experiences. They're going to new places, trying new restaurants, collecting experiences on their phone. You know, that they can prove that they were there, that they can share that experience with people. So listen, if you got a restaurant that is going to live in that experiential place, you got to make sure to give people something they can't get anywhere else, something they've never seen. Now, do you have to totally reinvent the wheel? No, of course not. You don't have to reinvent everything. But I think you have to provide something or a few things that they haven't seen before. Now, that can be the type of flavors you put there, the presentation of your food, some service flourish, some design flourish. Something about the experience needs to be different. That people travel to different points in the world because they can't, you know, there's only one Eiffel Tower. If you want to see the Eiffel Tower, you got to go to Paris. There's only one Mona Lisa. It's in Paris, right? There's only one Washington Monument. You're going to go to Washington. There's only one Mount Rainier. There's only one on and on and on. If you want something unique and specific, you're going to go to seek that out. And I think even if you've got a casual restaurant, I think you have to think in terms of what we can do that's different, that's unique, that's remarkable. That's something that we're going to have to, that's a way we're going to have to continue to innovate, because I don't think people are going to continue to pay the prices that we are soon going to have to charge for just things that they can get at anywhere else. Again, that's that commodity conversation. The commodity mindset says, all things being equal, a consumer will make their decisions based on one of three criteria: familiarity, convenience, or price. And independent restaurants cannot compete on any of those arenas. So what we have to do is create something that doesn't exist anywhere else in the world. And I think you have to double down on that and innovate in ways by creating something that doesn't exist, by doing something in a way that that will be new and fresh. By definition, you have to bring some creativity to the table. The other area we really have to talk about is labor. The labor model is changing, right? Minimum wage is going up. The tip credit in numerous states is being done away with. Make no mistake, I think this is going to continue to be a trend. Minimum wage is going to continue to go up. I think the tip credit for tipped employees is going to go away. So for all us restaurant owners, operators out there, it's going to be more expensive to staff our restaurants. I think we're going to have to come up with a new model, right? So the hospitality included, right, the no tipping model that Danny Meyer did and dozens, hundreds of other restaurants have done, right? And many have done it and then did away with it and went back. We have to figure out some way to take care of our people, make it equitable, fair, pay them what they deserve to be paid, but also do it in such a way that doesn't make for a $48 cheeseburger. I don't know how that's done. I know there are some models around the world that work. I was in the UK last year. I think that model is compelling, with basically a flat 10% service charge put on every check. He did something similar in New Zealand when I was there last year. I think that's compelling. If I'm really honest, I think that's what this is going to look like. Rather than people paying sales tax and a 3% credit card fee and tipping 18 to 20% and paying a 3%, you know, living wage fee or a benefits charge that some cities and states do, I just think it's all going to be wrapped up into more expensive food and a flat service charge that's applied to every check. That service charge would go to the owners, and the owners then would divvy it up. It's not a tip. I think what's going to happen is we're going to start paying our people really well, and I think that service charge is going to help offset some of the costs that we incur with our people. But this thing is something I've got clients in California, Oregon, Washington. They are contending with it. Michigan just passed a law. They're going to start contending with it. It's on the docket in all kinds of states across the Northeast. Nobody knows what's going to happen or when it's going to happen. But I think within the next 5 or 10 years, I think there's going to be less and less appetite to hang on to this tip credit. It's just what my gut tells me as I'm reading the tea leaves. So someone is going to have to innovate a new way of doing things. And you can wait and be second in line, or you can start wrapping your head around the problem. Innovation can be, can break boundaries and push restaurants in new directions. But some of this innovation is just practical for the well-being and longevity of our restaurants. And that's what I hope you see. So I'm talking about this in a couple different directions. And there's so many more examples. I just don't have time to give. But hopefully you understand. You understand what I'm saying. Evolution's what we talked about last week. I think that's really broken. I think we're really bad at that. And I think simply by acknowledging that a restaurant needs to evolve, that our industry needs to evolve, we can get better at it. And then the next piece of that conversation is innovation. We have to be willing to break boundaries, to try new things, to go first, even in little ways. And I'm talking about the big ways that I think are going to need to happen, but you're going to have to do it even in little ways. That's what I wanted to talk about. Again, we're in the middle of a 10-episode arc all about fixing restaurants. One final reminder, if you've got a busy restaurant but don't drop as much to the bottom line as you think you should, then I want to chat with you. Set up a call with me or someone from my team by visiting restaurantstrategypodcast.com/schedule. It's a 30-minute call where we just get to know each other a little bit better. You get to ask questions about the program. I'm going to ask questions about you and your restaurant, and let's see if you are a good fit. If we can solve the problem that you have, I would love to do it. We've put hundreds of people through this program. The systems I teach work, and I would love to be able to show you how to have a wildly profitable restaurant. Again, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to be here. I will see you next time.